and welcome to episode 56 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about gaming tables, and maybe accessories too. Most of us have seen them, specialized tables for tabletop gaming. But what are the pros and cons, and are they worth the price? Do we need it, or just really want it? We'll talk about all of that, but first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Deer, and Adam Harrison. And a special thanks to our new patrons, Carl Hammond, David Radke, and Lance Morgan, and a huge thank you to all of our patrons as well. And sorry, David Rutke, if I got your name wrong. I apologize. I'm doing my best.
Are they Radke?
Radke, maybe. Radke. Yeah, there's a T D T K E. I don't know at the end there.
So. David, send us an email.
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Josh. Let's see. Let's jump into. Well, first, happy birthday, Kitty.
Yay!
Yay!
I mean, technically it was yesterday, but nobody knows.
Yeah.
It could have been.
Did we mention either of your birthdays, though?
No, because...
I'm just that special?
You're just that special.
Aw.
Yeah. Yeah, we never mentioned our birthdays, did we?
We didn't. What are we thinking? Should.
Yeah. Somewhere there's static. So we'll figure out what's going on there. But anyway, thank you. Happy birthday, Kitty. Thank you, Josh. Gamers versus Harvey. Tabletop Game Talk has donated $325 to Harvey. Well, not to Harvey, to Houston, to the Houston Food Bank specifically.
We gave it straight to the hurricane. We're pro-hurricane here now, Chris.
No, we're not pro-hurricane. In fact, we're very anti-hurricane. Irma's now coming through as we speak. So most people who are listening know that Cindy and I are getting married on a cruise in 5 weeks, and we're watching that whole area quite closely. Nothing compares to what's going on actually down there, but it's something that we're.
Although Gloria did ask, she saw the coverage and she was like, "Did Chris and Sydney know that they are having their wedding during hurricane season?" She was like, "What happens if a hurricane comes and we're on the cruise?"
Yeah, so I didn't know that I was having it in as much in hurricane season as I thought.
Right,
I thought that hurricane season ended in October.
Okay,
apparently it ends in November.
Right.
Yep.
So we're more in hurricane season then, but end of October, September or November tend to be lighter.
Right. Times. And plus they seem to be moving at like sort of 9-10 miles an hour. So I'm hoping the boat can outrun that.
Actually, that's exactly what happens is right now the ships that are out that can't get into port, they just stay out in the ocean longer. They just go away from where the hurricane is. You're out there for a few more days and they come in when the hurricane passes.
Cool.
So, but the people who are down there now, they are in a much worse situation than we could possibly ever be.
Oh, of course.
Be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
The point is, Gamers versus Harvey, I think, was a great cause. I'm not sure if we're going to do a Gamer versus Irene. We have to see.
Irma.
Irma. Irene was last year, right?
Or 2 years ago? Like
it was a bad one that happened
ago.
A while back, yeah.
We should be against that one, too. We're against all hurricanes here.
Yeah.
Anti-hurricanes, hurricane damage, flooding, all those bad things. We don't like them. And we gave our proceeds from this month's Patreon to the Houston Food Bank.
Yes. And a couple of our listeners did, too, and sent me the links. So I put up all the total. Like I say, our total so far is $325. If you still want to donate, by all means, whatever you can do. And this isn't for us, by all means. I would say go directly to the Houston Food Bank or any other charity that is helping out people who are getting struck by the hurricanes, again, as we speak in some cases. On to happier topics, Massive Darkness.
Oh, I always love that name.
Happier?
I love that Massive Darkness name. It's just, it's so epic.
It is so epic. It's still our September contest. I still have not actually got it in the mail, but I keep getting updates saying the U.S. shipment is on its way. It's on its way. They also put it in the asterisk, hurricane allowing. But I expect to have it by the end of September to be able to give away. To enter our Massive Darkness giveaway, all you have to do is email us and put September giveaway in the subject line. If you put something else in the email, I will probably read it. I might put it on the air. I might reply back to you directly. And I might just giggle to myself and not do anything. But as long as you email and you have September giveaway in the title, you'll be entered. You're also automatically entered if you're a patron. But if you're not a patron... or if you are a patron and want to email me, I like reading those too. I got a little behind this week on email, so I spent about an hour and a half reading all the emails today.
I could tell, because I'm one of those people who clears out my email inbox as soon as I have an email. I'm like, oh, I see that notification. I want to clear it out. And the Tabletop Game Talk account ruins that. And we got up to like in the 30s.
I know,
something
I know.
This week.
I know. I tried.
I'm looking at that little number on my phone like,
Well, a lot of them I'll read as they come in, or I'll see them as they come in. I'm like, oh, I want to reply to this one, or I want to make notes of this.
So
I
mark it as unread. Yeah, exactly. It makes perfect sense, except that it drives me insane.
I understand that.
Fair enough.
I have no opinion.
None whatsoever. But you do read them sometimes.
I used to. And,
and then you got yelled at.
I've dropped. I've just got bad habits, I'm going to say.
Okay. Chris told us to stop marking them as red.
Well, that's all I ask is just don't mark them as red.
And the iPhone app has a really handy little button that does that for you. I don't know if... I'll explain this one on Android.
Yeah, it was difficult.
Fair enough. Again, moving right along. It's been a fun... So we're recording on a Sunday for the first time in like, it seems like a month and a half or something like that. And we're all a little bit slap happy for some reason.
Mm. Like, I don't think anyone slept this weekend.
No, we're all just a
you
tiny
expect
bit...
this level of sleep deprivation for me from now on.
A tiny bit sleep deprived. But yeah, let's go on and talk about a Kickstarter game.
All right.
So there's not a lot of good Kickstarters out there that I've been finding. And the one that I did back... I don't know actually qualifies as a good Kickstarter.
What? You backed it and it wasn't good? Well, you just had to fix your habit.
Shocking.
In my defense, it's over $1 million funded.
Okay.
And they only wanted 10,000.
All right.
And the only reason I'm saying I'm not sure it's a good one is because it's kind of an Exploding Kittens-esque type of thing. Although I do like the art and I like the gameplay looks a little bit more interesting as well. So Jeremy Fisher, he sent me... an email saying, hey, you should take a look at Unstable Unicorns.
So, it's a great name.
It is a great name.
It sounds like Exploding Kittens. I see what you mean.
Yeah. So the art on this game is fantastic.
Okay.
And the base game is only $15. For $15 for the art alone, it's worth getting.
Okay.
It is a draw one, play one kind of game. There's four different types of cards. There's unicorns, there's upgrades, there's magical effects and do stuff, and then there's downgrades to your opponent. And the whole goal of the game is to get seven unicorns in your army. So you're building a unicorn army.
Sort of like Rummy?
Everything's in front of you, so it's more tableau building. So if you put out a unicorn, we all start with baby unicorns, which may eventually get killed and impaled and eaten and, you know.
Wow.
But... But so you all start out with a unicorn and you're all trying to create seven unicorns or get seven unicorns in front of you as we're playing on each other's tableaus.
So you have to evolve them up to their fully adult unicorn?
No, the baby's
just... Are you breeding unicorns?
No breeding. You could just play a unicorn. Anyway, adorable.
So adorable.
At $50, so there's multiple levels, but at $50 you get all of the expansions. So of course, that's what I backed at.
Sure.
And one of the expansions is the not suitable for work expansion. So not suitable for work.
Not safe.
For adorable work. Unicorns.
I think the
not safe.
I think
either one. Not safe for work. Not suitable.
It,
yeah,
it works.
Don't be browsing this at the office.
Yeah.
Expansion. So I had to get that one, of course. The game actually does look kind of fun. I'm just saying. I'm looking for good Kickstarters, and I'm not saying this is the most amazing game
ever.
Right,
you're not saying it's groundbreaking. Like you say, it kind of looks similar to some other games.
But I would say this is a game I would pull out as kind of a party gateway game.
Yeah.
It plays up to 8 players, and it's just fun to look at. All the rules, I mean, the rules are draw one, play one, so all the rules are on the card. Each card has like a little special thing you can do. So there's a lot of potential here. It's a 30 to 45 minute playtime. So really not a huge commitment. It's funded over $1 million. Only 3 days left. So if it's interesting, if you like cute unicorns or things that are not suitable, not safe for work, not suitable for work, things that you shouldn't do at work, this is the game, apparently.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. So that was Unstable Unicorns on Kickstarter now.
It's like they got a synonym generator with Exploding Kittens and was like, oh, what's similar to exploding? And what's similar to kittens? Just saying.
Unstable. Yeah, exploding kittens. Unstable unicorns.
Yeah, come on.
I love it. It's still a deck
of cards. The gameplay mechanic sounds very different.
Though. Yeah, okay. I actually, I don't like the gameplay mechanic of exploding kittens. Okay. I don't think there is much of a mechanic there.
There's, not really.
This one does at least have a game behind it.
Okay.
And the art style is similar. It's not the same person, but it, at least I don't think it's the same person. In fact, it could be. I should do a little bit more research on this.
You should.
But only 3 days left, so I'll know later.
Call yourself a game master.
Josh, save me.
Oh, yeah. We're going straight into the next segment, which is feedback. So let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
So before you start, Sydney listens to all the episodes and she gives me like a rating of everything. She's like, your last episode was like one of your best. That should be the one that like you send in for awards and stuff. I'm like, all right, that's very nice to say because normally she does not say that.
Right.
I don't think she's going to say the same thing in this one.
Oh, no. But, you know, I think it's part of the charm, the rough around the edges. They really are doing this live to tape. So anyway, Michael via BGG says, thought I'd help out with the confusion on the last show. Spiel des Jahres, which was the award that we were mentioning, and we were saying sounded confusing. And I have to say, it still does sound like a sort of Game of Thrones, Spiel des Jahres, all men must die.
Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds less exotic then. is a huge award for board games every year put out of Germany. The main award, the Spiel des Jahres, I still can't say it, is the Family Weight Game of the Year, meaning that this is accessible to anyone. Then they have two other categories, the Kinderspiel, and the other is Kinderspiel. Kinderspiel is the Enthusiast Game of the Year, an award for heavier, meatier games for those that are deeper into hobby board gaming. Exit, the game, beat out Terraforming Mars and Raiders of the North Seas this year. The Kinderspiel, on the other hand, is the Children's Game of the Year, targeted at the young audience.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a secret that gaming as we know today sort of developed in Europe. You know, Eurogames, major influence onto the American games and kind of changed gaming as we know it.
You're welcome.
Yes. Well, you're still not from Germany and you're making fun of this award.
I know. I'm not making fun of it. I think it's great. It just sounds like something from Game of Thrones. That's what I'm saying.
It does. But we're going to, Sydney and I are going to Essen next year is where they do all this stuff too.
Wow.
So we're looking forward to seeing this in person next year. But it is a really big deal. And the games that win these awards tend to, you know, become, if you haven't heard about them, they're now a household name. And if you have heard about them, well, they've just made another 10 shipments.
Yeah, imagine if you get that stamp that you've had this award. Like, it's kind of like winning Sundance, you know, if you're into movies. It's like, oh my God, it won Sundance. It must be incredible.
Yeah. Well, and it actually kind of has the same political drama around it as well. Like, the ones that don't win, that should have won, that kind of thing. It's like, whoa, how did that win this particular spiel?
Right.
It's like...
Who bribed who for that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... It's interesting, but it's still one of those big things in the industry that's worth watching and paying attention to.
Cool.
All right, so we have some more feedback from Randy. He says, I picked up One Deck Dungeon at the start of the summer and was able to introduce my friend to the rebooted world of tabletop board gaming. I used a current gaming trend that you pointed out to introduce my friend to One Deck Dungeon. One Deck Dungeon has a solo play feature built into the game. I was able to teach the rules and mechanics of the game to my friend while playing solo play. I think the one player trend and co-op trend will be very important going forward as a way to introduce games to friends new to tabletop board gaming.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. Like if you were going to teach Pandemic, you could just set up the game and, you know, play it
out solo
and then other people can watch. Now I wouldn't play a full game in front of someone. No, I might get a little bit bored.
Well, what he points out with maybe co-op is play with your hand open for the first few even rounds. Once they pick up like the, you know what you do with your own cards, then you just pick them up and keep playing. You don't have to start again. It's real easy to move forward from there.
Yep. Well, there's something like Arkham Horror, the card game, which when Kitty looked at it and was going to try to play it, it was like,
that
okay,
rule book is just nuts.
Yeah. But I could play it solo. I could set it up and say, okay, I'm playing this. This is what I'm doing. This is how you take a basic turn. And at that point, All right, and now here's a deck for you. Let's play the next scenario with that.
Don't you play two characters, too, when you're doing solo?
No, you can play one character.
Okay.
Yep. You can play two-player, and a lot of times people will play two-players just because it gives you more deck-building options, but it plays fairly fine with most characters at one. Some characters are better than others at solo play, though.
It's always the case.
Yep. Quick question from Adrian. This isn't our official quick question, but it's like a super, super quick question. He says, what happened to your YouTube channel? I think I missed a lot of episodes waiting for your YouTube episodes. I finally checked out your site and realized that I missed a lot. Well, Adrian, welcome back. So the YouTube, and I mentioned this in the past, the YouTube channel is on hold as we try to figure out what we want to do with it. So the actual recording of these episodes, of our normal episodes, actually increases the amount of setup time, prep time, editing time, and in general just slows everything down. And the number of listeners we had on the YouTube channel was Adrian and I think two other people. So we're not going to do that anymore. But once I've settled into the new place and got my new gaming table, whatever that may be, we'll find out at the end of the episode. Then I will actually pick up and start doing reboxings and how to plays and quick setups and those types of things again. So we will be back on YouTube. It'll just be in a slightly different form and not until November.
And we won't have the full episodes up there.
Yeah. All right. Goodie.
So let's go to our real quick question. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Philip. I've been thinking about kickstarting some games, but I'm not sure how to pick the right ones. I've never kickstarted anything before, so how do you make decisions on what you will kickstart and what you'll pass by? For instance, how do you make decisions on what looks likely to actually finish and ship, what looks like it will be good quality, how the game will actually play when done, etc.? Have you ever had games that never made it to completion or games that where they're not what you expected based on the original Kickstarter? I've been watching several Kickstarters in other areas, and every one of them either didn't ship or when it was received had a lot of community complaints. So it gives me a lot of pause before I invest.
So we did an entire episode on Kickstarter. I want to say this was in the 20s somewhere. Kitty's now looking at it as I will keep talking. Whether or not to back something on Kickstarter, I do this every single week. I'm looking through Kickstarter. It's like, oh, do I want that? Do I not want that? There's a couple things I look at now. If you want to do something more systematic, then that is eye candy that I must own, which, to be fair, half the games I kickstart are that. Take a look at a couple different things. Number one, the buzz on BoardGameGeek. If it's not getting buzz on BoardGameGeek, and it doesn't have to be like top of the list, but if it's not being talked about on BoardGameGeek, if there aren't people asking the questions or looking at the rules or, you know, at least reviewing it, then there's probably something about the game that's not quite resonated with the audience. And I don't look into every game. I don't read every rule book. I don't look at every video I can find on a Kickstarter. I just let that buzz help inform my decision as to whether or not this one is worth backing or not. So that's one good way of taking a look at there. As far as whether or not you should worry about a Kickstarter being fulfilled, I find it to be much less of a problem in the board game category.
Yes,
so,
definitely.
Yep. As of now, I have not had any board game that is just been dropped off the face of the planet and not fulfilled. Some of them are delayed, but they're always in contact. They're always keeping you up to date on what's going on. And eventually I get them. I still have, I don't know, 40 or 50 outstanding, but they're not significantly past any delivery dates. They're giving normal updates and things like that. I do occasionally back other things on Kickstarter, and it's kind of a risk as to whether or not I'm going to get it. I don't know, but it's like, it's worth it. And they have an established company that's just trying to create a new product. So that's something I look at. But in short, I would say don't be afraid of Kickstarter. You're going to get a lot of cool games on Kickstarter, and you're going to get them presumably first. And it's kind of exciting to back something and then forget about it. And then a year later, it shows up on your doorstep and you're like, oh, yeah, awesome. I'm going to try out this new game. So, Kitty, did you find an episode number?
Yes, it's episode 31.
Oh, that's so not even close.
I mean, 31 is close to 20.
It is close to 20. I could have said 17.
I keep telling myself since I turned 31 yesterday.
It all comes full circle. But yeah, and the other thing too is like I would say don't worry about, don't overinvest. And a lot of people say, hey, I'm not going to kickstart it because I'm going to pay retail if I kickstart it, so I can just wait and get it for cheaper. That might be true.
Usually if you're paying retail on Kickstarter, you're getting bonuses and extras as well as the base game that you would buy for retail. I think if you're hesitant, maybe start with, you know, like a smaller investment. So we were just talking about
Unstable Unicorns.
Unstable Unicorns. The base game for that one, the minimum purchase amount on Kickstarter is $15. You don't have to go all in $50. If you're just looking for the game, you want to kind of dip your toes in something like that. You know, it's $15. If you don't like it, you don't get it, whatever it is, you know. Maybe it's not as big an investment as some of these ones where you're putting in, you can put up to like thousands of dollars into some of these to get miniatures and all of the bells and whistles.
Yeah, my biggest was Kingdom Death. I think that would ended up being a little under $300. And that was the minimum. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were like in close to $1,000 backed on that game, which they won't receive all of their swag or whatever for at least another 3 or 4 years. And that's like the plan. It was planned delivery for 2020 for some of the components.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I had no idea some of these went that long.
Yep. And that one made somewhere, I think it was like 13 million or something crazy like that. Like it was the amount of money.
Oh, it was one of the biggest Kickstarters ever, right?
Yep. So, and then you can go something like Gloomhaven where, you know, we backed it a couple months ago and we're going to receive it probably this month, if not this month or next month,
right.
You're going to receive your Gloomhaven pledge. So that's only a few months between, but he had already gone through everything and, you know, knew how long it was going to take.
It was a previously published game, and this was a reprint of. Yep. So those are always going to be faster.
Yep. And for those who have no idea how Kickstarter works, essentially what happens is you go and say, I want to kickstart this game at whatever level, and your credit card gets pre-authorized for $1, but it doesn't actually get charged. And then what ends up happening is if it funds, if it hits its goal, which almost you're going to know whether or not it's going to hit it or not. But if it hits its goal, then you're immediately charged. And you may be charged shipping as well. Most Kickstarters use a pledge manager to add in shipping based on where you're at and what you actually purchased. And then X number of months or years later, you get a package in the mail. And that's essentially Kickstarter in the board game realm. So let's get out of Kickstarters and board games, and let's talk about things that you have to play board games on.
In this episode, we're talking about gaming tables. These have been around for almost a decade now, and there are a ton of options and price points out there. But are they worth it? What advantages do these tables offer over more conventional surfaces? I think Chris really just wants to justify buying one. So let's see how this goes.
So this one we did research.
We totally did. Well, I actually did my homework this time as well, which is crazy. I clicked on all the links and watched a video and wow.
Yeah. I first came across gaming tables about, I don't know, when I probably started going back to Gen Con, so 8 or 9 years ago, I looked at a Geek Chic gaming table. It was like a choir of angels singing as you walk to these tables who are nice and...
Wait. Did they actually have music playing?
They might as well have because I heard angels.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, this was just in your mind.
The clouds opened, the light shone down.
Well, no, some of these people have really good marketing thing and they, you know, they put on music like that. That could have been a thing.
That would have been awesome. I would have just probably bought one. I almost bought one right then and there. So the way it worked at that point is you would say, I want one of these tables. And they say, great, go sit down with so-and-so person who has a piece of paper and is going to write down all of the different options you want. Then you're going to give that person a check for $500. Then we're going to call you in 6 to 8 months and actually confirm everything you want. And then we'll start building the table. And then we'll ship it to you about 2 to 3 months after that.
So you're going to have to wait a year for your table. It's like you're kickstarting your table here.
It's like you're kickstarting your table on a piece-by-piece basis. Yeah. Right. So it's like, well, I guess I could wait. I don't really need to know. It's like, but if you wait, you're going to lose your position in the queue. So you're going to get pushed back. I saw them at Gen Con, or at Origins. If you wait till Gen Con, then you're going to get behind all the people who backed at Origins. I'm like, oh man, I really want this. I really want this. Fortunately, I didn't have any space for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how did you, like, decide not to do that? Because, like, it sounds like something you get really suckered into.
it's something that I really wanted to be suckered into.
Yeah, I can
but
tell.
When you actually, I live in Chicago. We all live in Chicago, and the apartments in Chicago aren't huge.
Yeah.
And even our current apartment isn't that big. I have an actual dining room table, and it's our game table, and it's perfectly fine.
I'd say our apartment is fairly unusual. Well, that makes it sound like we share an apartment.
We
share a floor plan. The dining room is actually quite large for a Chicago apartment. I'd say it's the biggest room in the apartment by far, because it was built in the 20s and we haven't updated the layout since then. Yeah. So it is a really large dining room area for the city.
Yeah, and by really large for the city, it is about the same size as a bedroom for a suburban house.
Yeah.
And when we look at suburban bedrooms, we're like, man, this is so big. I could put anything in this bedroom.
I can't touch the walls.
So that's the reason why I didn't pick it up. Now I'm looking at a house. I'm looking at having a room that's dedicated to gaming. And it's going to be big enough to be able to fit a dining room table in there. So now I'm looking at gaming tables. And now that I'm seriously considering and I'm seriously looking at things, I'm like, oh, man, these prices are way bigger than I sort of want to.
Some of them are insane. I mean, it runs into the thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it starts in the thousands of dollars yeah. for, like, the official gaming tables.
If I want, like, a simple three, and we're going to name a few companies that you guys can check out if you'd like. We're not necessarily talking specific companies. I don't want to endorse or disdorse. Is there
unendorse.
Don't you have to endorse them before you can unendorse them? Anyway, I don't want to discourage any company because everyone has like things that make it good for them or not. So we'll talk about a few of them. But one of the ones we were looking at for a 3x3, you're still looking, and that's like its standard card table size. 2 feet
here, right?
Three feet by 3 feet. Mm. So for those who are not US, it's about a meter by a meter.
thank you. I appreciate it.
So even at that size, you're still looking at like $1,800 base. Now, it has the nice lip. It has the, you know, pull out the top so you have your felt about 3 inches below the surface and you can put the nice wood on top and have a quote-unquote dining table at that size.
The one with the acrylic where you can write with dry erase markers.
Yeah, you have the acrylic underneath it.
Wait. Acrylic that you can write with dry erase markers?
You missed this part?
No, this is why we have Josh, though, because other people are like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
So there's a number of things you can do with these tables. Uh-huh. You don't just have to have board games on there. Okay. What if you want to play role-playing games where you have like a paper mat and you want to be able to write on the paper mat?
Right.
So you can pull up this clear acrylic.
Or even what if you're playing Gloomhaven and you have your scenario all set up, you have your tiles laid out, you can put the acrylic over the top of your tiles.
So it's just a piece of clear plastic that's flexible.
Yes. So you can pull that up and you put down anything you want on the base wood part and then you put the acrylic on top of that and then that's dry erase.
So you can then, if the map's below it or if there is a map below it, then you can draw on top of it without, you know. Yep.
There's a bad guy here, here, and here, and you can't walk through this bush. Draw it all out.
Now I get it.
You can keep track of your stats in the corner. You don't have to have a piece of paper and a pencil in front of you.
That is sweet.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yep. But is it worth it?
Right.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah. Then you can put the felt on top of that. And now, normally, you wouldn't put the felt on the acrylic. If you're using the acrylic, you're using the acrylic.
Right.
But you can put the felt insert, and that's where you would do most of your gaming and rolling, and the dice don't roll off the table or anything. And since it's about three inches below the surface, you can put wooden slats. What are the
leaves?
Wooden leaves in there that then turn it into a normal kitchen table. But there's a hidden game underneath it. So,
well, see, the thing about the slats, though, and, you know, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but it just sounds like that's a lot of, like, effort to, like, oh, I've got to put all these slats in, you know? Like, I don't know. I feel like that would take a while. Just be annoying.
I think you can also get one solid piece covers.
Yes.
I mean, because most of the tables have those, right? It depends on the style.
Yeah, it was just the one that you were looking at earlier. You had it on the screen, and they had slats.
Yes.
But often they'll just have one piece. Right. That will just go on top.
So we're talking pros and cons. The pros and cons of the slats. The pros are one person can do it.
Yeah.
You can put the whole thing on there. The con is you have like these multiple pieces. But if you had a full table cover, and maybe not 3x3, 3x3 would be fine. But now think more of something like 5x6.
Okay.
Or, you know, 5x7, I think. The biggest versions they have, like 5 feet by 6 feet, 2 meters by 1 meter and a third.
We'll just say you're right. We'll just say you're right.
I'm trying to be international here.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
But that is a huge, like a single piece of wood to put on top is actually really big. So you're going to need multiple people.
So imagine I'm waiting for you and Chris to come over and I want to start setting up a game.
Right.
I am going to lift that off by myself.
Right.
Where am I going to put it? I don't know. But with the slats, especially they have, you can get a shelf built under. So as you take out the leaves, you can put them on the shelf. So they're immediately out of the way.
Yeah. So take the leaf from the top, slide it out underneath the table on the bottom.
I don't know, man. I still think you're crazy. Seems like a lot of work. But hey, I mean, you're into gaming and you love this table. So yeah, you probably will put the time in to take all the different slats out.
So
also, if you're using it for gaming all the time, you might just leave them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then this gets into another kind of pet peeve. And Christy had the same comment. So I'm going to read an excerpt from hers. I saw the Carolina gaming tables at Gen Con. Just an aside, the Carolina gaming tables are Clint Black is co-owner of that company. Clint Black is also a member of Pinnacle. I want to say Pinnacle. Savage Worlds. Whoever does Savage Worlds, I think is Pinnacle. I'm going to have to look at this now. But so they have their own role-playing line. And they now have their own gaming table line. So it's kind of like crossing this boundary from, well, the role-playing game is fun, but the money's in gaming furniture right now.
Yep.
So they're also doing that. But his family's also been in gaming furniture, or well, not gaming furniture, but in furniture for like several generations. So he's so like,
they actually have those skills. Yeah, right.
Right. So he's merging those two things together to say, oh, I could take the skill that my family has and this passion I have for role-playing and combine them. So it's like gamers making game tables, which I think is the mostly the case anyway.
Right.
But I digress. So Christy saw these tables at Gen Con. Looked very lovely and sturdy, but, and this is the key, the playing space was a little deep for my taste. Board game tables, so basically what I'm getting here, she also mentioned that board game tables, also at Gen Con, it literally is called Board Game Tables, that's the company, were a little more her speed. Also talks about the problems replacing existing tables. She has a nice dining room table now. She would love to get a gaming table, but they like their dining room table, and you it's can't have both.
It's having the space, isn't it?
Yep. So, but the thing that I really found interesting here was having a deep playing space. We were talking to Kitty off mic.
Yeah, this was at the end of last episode. We were talking about this very thing, weren't we?
Yeah. I don't want to necessarily reach down into my table.
Right.
Because if I'm doing, it just feels a little awkward.
Clunky.
Clunky. Like I have this railing. It's like playing at a pool table where you're kind of sitting and the pool table lip is right there, but you don't have a really good spot to put your arms. And
also, I like to sit either cross-legged or up on my knees while I'm gaming because I'm a little bit short. I have a hard time seeing to the middle of the game sometimes. So I try to lift myself up that way, you know, basically sitting on a phone book over here. But I need to have room to slide my legs under the table at least a little bit. So
right, when you have them cross-legged like that.
Yeah, so a deeper table means I'm more likely to run into I can't sit as comfortably at the table.
Mm.
Even some, if they've got drawers under there or shelves for leaves, sitting cross-legged might even get a little uncomfortable.
Yep. So
but also, on the other hand, having a lovely little bump going on here right now, if I lean over the table, I'm not going to knock over a bunch of pieces in a 3-inch deep well, whereas that's I can true. Take out a significant amount of a game right now.
In case anyone missed it, Kitty's referring to the fact she's pregnant.
Yeah.
In fact, I just got kicked pretty hard.
So. Oh.
So, and that's the thing. When you have this ledge, and which is usually about a 3-inch ledge, and I don't know how many meters, but let's see, about 10 centimeters. That's about right.
Yeah, it is about right. no, it's about 7.5 centimeters.
All right, 7.5 centimeters. Yeah, 2.54.
Yeah.
That's an actual exact number, by the way.
That is an exact number.
Yeah.
Correct.
But anyway, when you have that ledge, it's just common habit or common practice or whatever for people to put drinks on the ledge. Now, the rebuttal will be in a second. But if it's your nature to put a drink on a table and, oh, look, here's this wooden table, skinny as it may be, that I'm going to put my drink on. Mm. And oops, I bumped something with my baby bump. And then all of a sudden, sparkling water all over Gloomhaven.
Well, yeah, that would be
victimized. Right. Baby bumps, sparkling water. Chris is picking on me.
Totally. I'm just using you as an example. It was an accident. Now, all of these tables, not all, but most all of these tables have little latches or little
rails.
Vocabulary today. Really, we have not drank anything except I'm drinking coffee right now just to. I don't know. But anyway, they have these rails that you can put cup holders in or dice holders or different ledges or
component
something. Component boxes. So
you
would have to get the cup holders to encourage people to not put their drinks on the ledges. And each cup holder is in the neighborhood of $80 to $120 a piece.
Wow.
To add to your gaming table.
Well, some of them have them built into that lip thing around the edge, which, you know, might be your style. I know the poker tables often have it done in that exact way. But yeah, some of these gaming tables also do it that way too. But I think it would, in my mind, it would be better to have those slidey out ones personally. I think that's a better way to do it.
I also liked, I don't remember what company it is that makes this specific wine-shaped cup holder.
It's the same. We're talking Geeks and Sun as the tables that we're kind of quoting. And
are they the same
quoting.
Ones with the slats, right?
They're the same ones with the slats,
ones with the leaves on top. They're kind of like the Cadillac, I feel like.
They're the new
gaming tables.
Yeah, they're the new Geek Chic.
Oh, yeah. When I looked at that website, there were some really sexy tables. There was this white one with like fancy legs that like curved out. And I was like, oh, that's like the iPhone of tables. you know, it just looked sexy. But it had, Kitty pointed out, it did have drawers, which wouldn't be good for her.
But all of those things are optional.
Right. Yeah.
So when you go to these sites, well, not all of them, but like the Geek and Sun, we'll use that as our kind of custom built. Carolina Gaming Tables and Board Game Tables, you do very similar things, custom built stuff. They may have more or less options and the pricing might be a little different. But
they also might work slightly differently.
They also, yeah, there's different, like whether it's a flat top or multiple leaves or whatever the case is. That's Carolina Gaming Tables, Board Game Tables, Geek and Sons. We'll talk about a few other companies too. And all you don't search for gaming furniture. We talked about last week we're going to do gaming furniture. If you do a search for gaming furniture, you're going to find mostly video game stuff or like chairs and things like that.
Those weird floor rocking chair things.
Yeah. Mm. Search for board game tables on Google and that's where you'll find all of these different things. But they have options. So the ones where you see the drawers underneath, you can just say, I don't want the drawers because the drawers are like a $500 add-on anyway. So maybe you don't want to get those drawers.
Okay.
Carolina Gaming Tables, they had, and Terrence mentioned this actually, kind of like an armoire of like gaming. So it had a fold down table, almost like a Murphy bed
yeah.
for gaming tables. So that folded down, but it had shelves where you could put your books and your games. It had a cabinet underneath it. And it was like this really nice piece of furniture that you could put against a wall and it had all the stuff you would need to have a little mini gaming collection there. I talked to them while we were there and they're like, yeah, this is not officially on our catalog yet, but you know, we put it together because we thought it was cool and an engaging interest in things like that. So this gaming furniture stuff is branching out. I'm not sure the armoire. I think the armoire is really, really, really cool. I don't see where I would ever use it.
It does
for
seem
my
to
collection.
Eliminate at least one player at the table by being attached to a wall.
Yeah.
So yeah. there's that.
The best I would say is the little Murphy table would be for like setup or, you know, to unpack the game and read the rules and stage it for the table that's behind you, also by Carolina Gaming Tables.
Wow. Staging area. Amazing. Yeah.
That's convenient.
Oh, okay.
I was saying. But yeah, so Terrence saw those there, and I thought those were pretty cool. I don't know.
Well, you were talking about how, yeah, like that leaning into that deep well, especially if it is a deeper, deeper well, like Christy was mentioning. You know, I think, Kitty, you said, you know, we're going to get carpal tunnel syndrome or something. You know, like I kind of get that. It's kind of like leaning down into this hole. Like, I don't know. But I mean,
my neck's going to hurt. I don't know.
I guess poker players do it all the time, but maybe it's easier with cards because you can just kind of throw them down and
so
throw the chips down.
Let's
I don't know.
Go to poker tables for a minute. Because we want to talk about them as an alternative to gaming tables. And I want to credit the right person here.
Oh, yeah.
Now I feel terrible because...
Oh, boy,
Chris. We'll find it. But anyway, Kitty's going to find it. But the poker tables, like Texas Hold'em... actually, you don't even need a Texas... Michael? Okay. Let's see. Oh, yes. Here we go. I've mentioned before that I have limited space at home, but I didn't want to settle for just a simple folding table. I was jealous of those awesome custom board gaming tables. People that have a larger homes get to make use of them. Then I turned to an older hobby and realized I have a good option available for me for around $100. I picked up this gem for $130. Used with free shipping from a garage sale. Now, there is a link to it, but I'll talk about it specifically what it is in a moment. If you want the link, go to our board game thread, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Take a look at episode 56. Look at for Michael's post, and there's a link there. But we'll get into specifically what it is. Actually, before I read the rest of this, it makes more sense. This is just an 8-person poker table. It's a felt top. Which most card tables would have.
This is a folding one.
It's a folding.
It folds in half and the legs come in. It folds to the size you would think of a card table folded up, but it is about twice the size of a card table.
Yeah. It'd be like two card tables side by side once it's set up. And then when folded up, it's just like a really thick card table.
Yeah.
At least from what we can tell from the pictures. There's 8 built-in cup holders. There's a soft ledge that you couldn't possibly set anything on because it's like a... faux leather padding, but it's only maybe an inch or so above the surface. So when you're talking about reaching in, you're not really reaching in. You're resting your hands on this nice soft ledge, and you're actually resting your hands on the felt of the table.
I was going to say, I think it's actually more ergonomic. Like if you're looking at it, it looks like the kind of gel things you get to go in front of your keyboard to make it more comfortable.
Yes. And so Michael goes on, the size is perfect for me and I can have friends over and have room for us all to play and with cup holders to prevent drinks from being in the way on the table and spilling to the games. The best part is it folds small enough to lift behind my couch. Now it's a bit heavier and larger than some of the more flimsy ones, but I'm glad I invested in this model over other options for a bit of extra space for larger games. He says, if I wanted to invest money, though, I would probably pick up Game Anywhere tables. It'd be about $400, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Game Anywhere tables in a second because they're very similar to this concept. This got us down a rabbit hole of looking at poker tables instead of game tables. And poker tables have been around for a really long time.
Yep.
They're cheap. They do exactly what you want in a game table. Usually meaning cup holders and felt top, so easy to roll dice and enough of a lip that things don't fall off of it. And you can get these in super, super fancy stuff, like octagon wooden tables, so 8 players sitting around, little place for your drink, another place for like cards and whatever, like all these different pieces for a fraction of the price of designated board and game tables.
Well, I guess it's a much bigger market, you know, poker players. So they've been doing this for longer. So it's like, well, I guess the economies of scale pay off. You know, if you can make a batch order of these awesome tables, then it's going to be cheaper to sell to people. So yeah, it kind of makes sense, but it kind of blew our minds. You know, when you were looking at some of the custom options for, I think it was one of the companies we had up, you know, you were thinking, well, I would have to spend probably $5,500. And then these are like a few hundred dollars for like an awesome, awesome poker table.
To be fair, I think the materials used are not as high quality. A lot of the gaming tables are really high quality material. And also, they're trying to be a dual function piece of furniture. They're trying to look nice. They're trying to be a dining room table. You can cover them. You can uncover them. You can use them in multiple ways. A poker table is just a poker table.
That's true.
They really don't do both things well.
Yeah.
So there's both sides there.
Yep. And I would say the folding tables, the folding poker tables, the ones that Michael's referring to, those are, we found some anywhere from on Amazon, from anywhere from like $100 to maybe $300 for the, you know, more higher quality foldable tables. The ones we looked at, they're like made of wood, actually have a pool game involved with it as well. A top that you can flip over and all those kind of things. That was about $1,500, but still very, very sufficient for 90% of all your board gaming needs. So I started looking at that. I'm like, maybe I should look at more poker gaming tables as opposed to just board gaming tables and see what's out there, the different prices that are out there. Because if I really need a bigger table, I have a dining room table. And we could move a game to a dining room table if we had a bunch of people. But if it's just four or six people, I don't need to have this massive eight-person plus table for just basic gaming in the game room. So it's just so compelling. And Michael, thank you for pointing this out, because I would have never even thought about it.
I also want to talk a little bit about using your regular dining room table.
Yeah.
As your gaming table. Chris, you have a really nice mat for your dining room table.
Why, thank you, Kitty. That's very nice of you to say.
It's almost like a mouse pad. It's a thin neoprene nylon.
Yep.
Yeah. It is thinner than a mouse pad, probably half to a quarter of the size thickness wise of a mouse pad. But it makes it easy enough to pick up components. Any bumps in the table, you don't see under it, yet you can still slide cards across it easily. I'm actually thinking of getting one for my table, but I'm waiting because this is from Gamer Mats.
Yeah.
And they are working on getting a larger size printer, and I have a much larger table than you, so.
A much longer table.
Well, I think mine's also, maybe it's about the same width, but I was hoping for the bigger width as well, because mine does have more ridges and bumps to it than yours does.
Yep. So this one I have, like I said, Katie said, it's Gamer Mats, and it's about 3 feet by 3 feet, so meter by meter. I'm going to keep doing that.
You should.
And it wasn't very expensive at all. I think I spent like $25, maybe $30 at a show, and you can get them for even cheaper online. They have like plain ones that are just like red, green, black, choose your flavor. They make them in lots of different sizes, but the width is the limiting factor. So right now, I think 3 feet is about as much as you're going to get as a width until they get their bigger printer where they can start doing like 5 or 6 feet. Otherwise, you just have to – the length is not a problem, though, because they come on rolls, and they just cut the roll at whatever length that you want. So Kitty has a long, almost kind of like a picnic table-esque table. It's slotted. There's like – it's made of planks of wood.
I believe it is a vineyard-style table.
I'll call it a picnic table.
It's nicer than that.
It is. It's a very nice picnic table. And I'm teasing. But there's actual space between the different planks on the table itself. So having like rolling dice on there, or even like the little cardboard bits, you have to have a tablecloth on there.
Yes.
So if you put a neoprene mat down, now you've suddenly converted this table into a really nice long gaming table, and it just smooths everything out.
Well, not only that, it's really portable, so you could just roll it up and take it to your, you know, uncle's lake house that the family's all going down to for Thanksgiving or whatever. And take it there.
Yeah, and they're actually cheap enough where if you wanted to go outside and literally just put it on a picnic table, you can turn a picnic table into a gaming table. That's especially if it's inside of like a sunroom or something like that under a ottoman.
Now you do get back to the problem of people are going to spill drinks. The dice are going to roll off the table sometimes. So, you know, you can solve those problems with other workarounds.
Yeah, I'm going to do, we were talking about YouTube earlier. We were talking about before the show that I want to do a YouTube video on how to roll dice. Especially how not to roll dice, because we watched enough of these videos where it's like, do you have this problem where dice are always rolling off the table? And I'm like, I have these problems where like people...
infomercials where somebody's like, oh no, I've never rolled a dice before.
But I've also played games with those people. And you do not need to throw dice overhand to make them random.
Well, Gloria walked in with me because we just finished eating and we came here, and you showed her, didn't you? You were like, oh, the splash method. I'd never heard of the splash method before either, but you held your hand up like maybe a meter from the table. And then
not a meter.
Not that much. But and then let it go. And it's like, yeah, they go everywhere. But Gloria really liked that. She kind of wanted to do the crazy.
Yeah. She's like, no, that would be fine. I'm like, no, it's never fine.
And I'm just going to start doing it to piss you off.
You would. You do it now anyway, so it's fine.
To be fair, we were just playing around with dice. So, you know, we were throwing six dice on the table like, haha, but we didn't have any game pieces to knock over boards to ruin, or, you know, these rolls didn't matter. So we weren't crawling under the table looking at, you know, it's an eight.
Yeah, but and that takes us back to why we might want a gaming table with a lip. All right, what about do-it-yourselves? There was a post on our Board Game Geek thread that had a link to a number of different do-it-yourself posts. And I think it was Steve, actually. I love having a gaming table because I love long games. Having a vault that can pause a game to be picked up later is priceless. Having a gaming table is like the change from cardboard chits to metal coins. I never really thought of it this way. Do you need metal coins? No. We've talked about this before. Do they add something to the feel and tacticity? That's a word. Of the game? Yeah. And it's actually, I pull out all metal coins anytime I'm playing because I have enough that I can just sub them in. I think a game table is kind of like that. He makes a really good point here. He says it is huge and makes every game much more enjoyable. He then goes on, but professionally made tables are expensive, so he ended up building it himself. He notes that one of his is actually listed in the do-it-yourself links on the thread. The best part about doing something like that or working with one of the high-end table companies is that you can make it specific to your needs. So there is an entire number of threads on Board Game Geek, and I'm sure YouTube videos and all that.
Chris Anderson linked to a few of them from our page.
Yep. Thank you, Chris. And what they've been doing is taking the IKEA, and you think it's hard to say Spiel des Jahres, Bjursta, Bjursta tables. And these are relatively inexpensive. We actually have a variety of ones because they're, you know, it's a 3x3 table that can expand out to a 6x3. And this actually might be a little bit different. The ones they're talking about here is a fixed size, though. It's a fixed length, fixed width. It has about a 2.5 to 3 inch board that hangs down. Well, if you flip that upside down, suddenly you have a well that you can put your game in.
Oh, I see.
And if you have multiple of them, you can put a table topper on that by using one as a table top to the other. So you can mod these things, and they're not expensive. They're IKEA, and you know, for a couple $100, you have everything you need to mod this table to be your gaming table. You go buy some cheap felt from Michaels or expensive felt from PokerTableFelt.com. I just made that up, but I wouldn't be surprised if it exists. Kitty's checking. Fact check. And then you have yourself curious. A table. He does mention, though, that it's probably not going to look as professional. But again, it kind of depends on your needs, like what you're looking for as to whether you care if it's professional.
If you have more time than money, I mean, if you know, you were just seriously considering spending $5,500 on a table. And you are still considering spending that much money. Oh, wow, really?
I love it.
I can't believe that. Crazy. Put it in the show notes. But yeah, you were going to spend $5,500 on a table. You might still do that. And yet these people, if they have the time, they can save $5,000 by cutting up some IKEA tables because they have the time to do that. Then, yeah, save yourself $5,000.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I am not going to spend $5,500 on a gaming table. I am to go to the website. I'm going to click all the buttons. I'm going to price out the most perfect, you know, Ferrari model gaming table. I'm going to look at it and be like, I could buy, I don't know, 300 games for that amount. Maybe not three. Actually, depending on the price of them. But I could buy over 100 games for the same amount.
Right.
And actually play the games as opposed to having this just luxurious gaming table. I may... Like, my limit for pricing on a table, with chairs, I'm going to put it a hard 2K.
Okay.
Like, if I can get a nice table with a felt top and six chairs to go around it, and I'm not over 2K, that I can justify.
Right.
And I may end up doing exactly what Kitty just said, is kind of what I'm doing now, is go to something like The Room Place or Value City Furniture or something like that, find a table that is a good size and good height, and then get custom felt to the same size and just mount it somehow. Probably not super glue or something like that.
I heard a lot of people talk about spray adhesives.
Spray adhesive works.
Works really well.
Yep. Or even like poster tack, you could potentially do that. Something that's removable, so when the felt wears out, you can replace it. That may end up be what I... May end up being what I do. And I will let everyone know what I settle on. But one thing I've discovered while looking at this is there's a lot of affordable options.
Yeah.
I don't need to go with the like super expensive options.
Yeah.
I vote for comfortable chairs over LED lights any day.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't add that much to the game. I'm going to be sitting for an extended period of time. I want a comfortable cushioned chair with a back that I can lean back on and not feel like I'm hunched over for like hours at a time.
I agree.
Yep. I'm sitting on a folding chair right now just because at one point I needed more chairs at this table and there's a nice chair I'm looking at that's empty right now. But even those folding chairs, I put an extra pillow on the bottom because you want to be comfortable. I agree. The chairs are one of the most expensive pieces of a table anyway. But investing in good chairs is better than investing in a huge expensive
or
table.
Or LED lights. You were talking about Hue earlier. They have like strip LED lights that you can like do little light shows and stuff.
Well, Geek & Sons has like you can mount the LED lights on the inside of it. Ah. And then they give you a remote that allows you to control the color and intensity of the different lights as it like lights the outside of the board. That's pretty sweet.
Into a cave, the lights turn red.
We didn't talk about Game Toppers. Game Toppers LLC. Actually, Christopher Dung said it first in the thread, but a number of people mentioned this. Custom game tables would be great, but I would first need to have dedicated gaming space. He then talks about Game Toppers as an alternative to this. Now, this will be kickstarted relatively soon. Gaddis Games, GADDIS Gaming, is kickstarting something right now that's a table topper.
Is that the guy with the top hat?
The Game Toppers LLC is the guy with the top hat.
Okay.
Yes. What these are really just the tops of tables that you can put on your existing table.
The lip.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, they're the entire top, but they kind of overflow whatever table you're on. So they're going to be a little bit bigger than your table in theory. They wouldn't necessarily have to be. Right. But they have all the cup holders, all the attachments, everything you can do with a normal gaming table, but it's just the table without the legs.
Okay.
Which is great for people with limited space because you can just plop this down. And it comes in multiple different styles and qualities and from plastic to wood and all of those things. The Gaddis Gaming ones, they use a thick foam. So they're lighter, but they're more for like miniature type games. And it's the same kind of concept. So if you're looking for game topping type of thing, either look for Game Toppers or Gaddis Gaming. And kind of get an idea for what you can set on top of
and
that.
These things are a lot cheaper, right, than a full table.
Yeah, they're going to range closer to $100 to probably $400 at the high end, as opposed to, you know, 10 times that much for the full table.
We also promised to revisit the Game Anywhere table and didn't.
Yes.
So we should get back to that.
Yes. So Game Anywhere. What was it called? This Transformers tables?
Yeah.
So it's a briefcase that turns into a gaming table. It's really kind of a fold-out table that just has lots of different folding things. They're metal, so they're not light, but that also makes them sturdy. And when you fold them out, think about a folding table that just folds out, legs fold out.
It's almost like the board game, like, themselves. Like, think of the way that games fold out. You know, you start with a square and end up with a huge rectangle. It's similar.
It's basically what it is. It's magnetic, so you have all these magnetic accessories that you can put on there, such as cup holders, card holders, trays, all the standard accessories for gaming stuff. These are another one that I think would be great with something with limited space, or if you didn't have, maybe you had a gaming area in the basement, but you didn't want a table set up all the time. This would be that table. Or what I really think is... you'll see in a lot of future conventions is people will bring these around as their demo tables. So you set those up. Game Toppers is actually doing a really good crossover with people demoing games where they say, demo your games on our Game Topper and here's a stack of cards to give out. And I'm like, where can I get that? There's a couple games where I went over just because I'm like, that table's really cool. Where'd you get it? It's like, it's a Game Topper. Do you want to try out this game? No, just tell me everything about this topper you got going on here. But I think the Game Anywhere tables are very similar to that in nature. They're not a permanent solution. I wouldn't put them in like a permanent board game room, but they are a really cool solution for people who are on
the go. And again, they're cheaper than the full customizable tables that we've been talking about earlier.
Exactly. Let's see. What else? Is there anything? This topic, I could go on and on and on and on and on. Like, it's really cool to think about this. Most of the people that posted either did it themselves, would want it, but for some reason can't, don't have the space. All of these things are like the biggest, like are completely valid things.
It's interesting because it's totally, you know, I think there's a definite correlation between your involvement in board gaming and how you feel about this topic. Because, you know, for me, who's someone much more casual, I'm like, oh, this is so unnecessary. You know, I'm just like, wow, 5,500 on a table. Like, this is crazy. People are crazy. Why would you do that? But I get it. It's like anything that you're really into, you know, you can go down that rabbit hole and really pimp out whatever it is. And if you use it enough, it makes sense. But for someone like me, it's like, oh my God, I can't even imagine ever
spending.
How
often do you actually play games at your house?
Right, exactly. Hardly ever. Yeah.
Chris, how often do you play games at your house?
About 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's depending on how much use you're getting out of it. I was actually looking at some of the coffee table gaming tables. And as cool as that is, I'm not sure how useful they would really be. I feel like
they seem a little low for a full game table.
Yeah. I feel like everyone would be sitting on pillows. I don't know.
Oh, I saw that exact same thing and thought the same thing. Even the woman who was in the picture looked really hunched over, and I was like, oh, right? God, no.
But yeah. It does seem like a cool piece of furniture to have. I don't know.
If you're always in your front room and the coffee table is your only thing and you always put puzzles on it, then I get it. But yeah.
Yeah. So I do want to read David's comment. I think it's funny. I would love a truly dedicated gaming table, but just don't have the room. Most of my game nights are 4 people, so I rely on the old trusty folding cart table. Works just fine. And that's what it's designed for. It's a game table. They don't call it a card table because it's cards. The cards are the game. And then we're going to go out. And do you guys have any other things to add?
No.
We don't have any conclusions or suggestions or recommendations. I don't know what I'm doing yet. I will let you know. But hopefully we've given everyone some ideas of alternatives to gaming tables. I'm actually going to really look into the nice poker table to see if I can find something there that'll fit.
Even I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. So that's the one I'm going to research more so than anything else. And then I might look at a DIY, but I don't really have the tools
for it.
Oh,
you are way too lazy to do something like that. No offense, because I am exactly the same way.
He's gonna trick me into doing it, because I don't know if you knew that. I love putting together IKEA furniture. It's high-stakes Legos. It is the best. I just need somebody stronger than me to lift things while I do it.
Yeah, we could find out something cool.
Yeah.
So, on Jason's comment, though, as much as I want the $5,000-plus price is outside my grasp, plus, other options available have shown me that I can enjoy the gaming experience without paying that huge price. I believe that a table should be an attractive piece in your home and should flow with the design of your home. With that said, a custom table from Geek & Sons would not really work in my home. So that's why game table toppers coming to Kickstarter is very appealing to me. Since I don't have a need for a second game table, though, it'll have to wait. I think that's a sentiment for a lot of people. It's just like, it's something we all think about, oh man, that'd be cool if we had it. But we don't really need it. We can wait. Let's take your time and make the right call for yourselves. Ooh, that got deep.
It did.
All right, Josh, you ready to get us out of this?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all of our patrons, Emil Gilljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, and Lance Morgan. Until next week, when we talk about hidden traitor games or trader games. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Just for that, I'm going to develop a game where you don't know if I'm trading with you or not.
So it's a hidden traitor game?
A hidden traitor game.
Oh my God, this sounds amazing.